Howdy, folks. Welcome to Lords of Order, a DC's Dr. Fate fan podcast. I'm your host, Ed Moore. Feedback can be sent to bigtimenoise.com/Dr. Fate, the website, the Dr. Fate fan podcast at gmail.com, the email address, Teal Productions on Twitter, and Teal Productions or Lords of Order on Facebook, pages for both. I'm looking at All Star Comics Presents Super Squad, or better known just as All Star Comics, issue number 58, cover dated January-February 1976, on sale date October 19th, 1975. Now, lest there be confusion, this is the continuation of All Star Comics from the Golden Age. Issue 57 dropped in 1950, so it's been nearly 25 years, a couple months short. And they resuscitated this title, albeit adding Presents Super Squad, which I'll kind of touch on here when I'm talking about the story, which, by the way, there will be spoilers. So keep that in mind for this book that is 50 years old. Woof. So the cover, very dramatic cover. We have three individuals coming at us. Maybe you were too tough for the Justice Society, but Mr. Now you've got to fight the Super Squad. And you can see there's a shadow casting over top four Justice Society members that are laying amidst rubble. Golden Age, Green Lantern, Flash, Wildcat, and Dr. Fate, which is why I'm talking about the book. The individuals coming at us trying to help our Justice Society members, we will find out, are the Star-Spangled Kid, Robin, and Power Girl. Now, all of this is happening on a different Earth from the one that we normally find DC Comics set on. For those of you that might not be aware, the Justice Society, Justice League team-ups that I've been talking about recently on the show, that is the Earth 2, Earth 1 back and forth. And if I confuse them, I apologize. I am far from being an expert on DC Comics, but I do enjoy some of their books, so I may mess up which Earth they're from. As a matter of fact, I'll try not to mention it. That being said, it has come to pass that the Golden Age heroes that we read from DC Comics in the Golden Age have their own Earth. The contemporary heroes that we read about now are on a different Earth. These characters are from the Golden Age Earth. Earth 1 should be considered the Earth, the dimension that all our current things are occurring on. Earth 2 would be that the Golden Age heroes typically are shown to be from. So this should be occurring on Earth 2. The cover was drawn and inked for us by Mr. Mike Grell, colors by Tatiana Wood, and lettered by Gaspar Saladino, just to throw out some names there. The main story inside is scripted by Jerry Conway, penciled by Rick Estrada, inked by Wally Wood and Al Sirois. Colors are unknown at this time, and it's lettered by Ben Oda. So the book opens telling us Earth 2 is a world much like our own, though slightly different. On Earth 2, there are good men and bad, justice and injustice, triumphs and tragedies. There are men as ordinary as we are, and men not so ordinary. You're looking at six very extraordinary men, members of the Justice Society of America, and soon to be members of a new team dedicated to the war against evil, a team called All-Star Super Squad. And those six men are Golden Age, Flash, Dr. Midnight, Wildcat, Dr. Fate, Green Lantern, and Hawkman. A roll call, Flash, Hawkman, Dr. Midnight, Wildcat, Dr. Fate, Green Lantern, that I just listed, included Star-Spangled Kid, Robin, and Power Girl, who are on the front cover. Our Justice Society members that are here are looking at a monitor board of some sort. Wildcat, come on, Doc, you can't be serious. Are you absolutely sure? And Dr. Midnight tells him, we received the message yesterday, Wildcat, a communication directly to our private computer, telling us that a disaster would strike each of three cities in the next day, Seattle, Washington, Cape Town, South Africa, and Peking in the Republic of China. Our computer evaluation shows without a doubt that if these disasters occur as scheduled and continue to their climax, the resulting chain reaction in the biosphere would destroy all life on Earth. So there we go. That's what our Justice Society is up against, based in, I believe at this time, New York, probably. They decide to separate, which is pretty traditional for All-Star Comics, being that it's a ensemble book. We divide up. Hawkman lays out the assignments. Dr. Midnight and I will take Seattle. Flash and Wildcat, you handle Peking. Dr. Fate, Green Lantern, Cape Town is your baby. Meeting adjourned. And they leave the brownstone here, which I believe that's what this panel is supposed to show us, a brownstone, but it looks more like Dr. Fate's tower, really. We then cut to Star Spangled Kid, which we conveniently find out, or I should say who we conveniently find out, is in Seattle. So he's flying around with the cosmic rod, being that Starman is currently laid up with a broken leg, he says here. And so rather than just having no one doing anything in Seattle and the Star Rod not being used, the former Seven Soldiers of Victory member is, this Star Spangled Kid here, is using it to patrol the city to do some superhero stuff. Comes upon a group, looks like holding up a bank. There's a shootout. He zips down, blocks bullets, melts the gun, knocks the guys out with some punches, head butts, karate, judo flips. But then he just kind of sits down on the curb, somber. Well, you know, that was fun, but I still don't have anything to do. And more importantly, in his case, and the case of six other individuals, actually, they were recently, the Seven Soldiers of Victory were recently brought forward in time from the 50s, which is where they were when they were sought for help. Seven Soldiers of Victory are a DC Golden Age. They're another Golden Age team comprised of, I don't really have that handy, but it's not germane to the story, actually, just that Star Spangled Kid was there, was part of it. They were brought forward. Justice League of America issues 101 and 102. 102, which is the summation of the story I spoke of in episode 134. So you can go back, which probably would mean that 133 was my discussion on JLA 101, but without looking, I'm not going to guarantee that. But I believe that's what it is. 133 and 134, I should have talked about that story. So Star Spangled Kid is kind of bemoaning he is a man out of time, which seems like it's a lot more common in comic books than maybe I would have thought at one point. Seems to happen quite a bit as I go through my different eras of reading. I encounter that in most every era. My main thoughts being Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, whatever you want to call the however many eras have been since the Bronze Age till now. There are examples probably in every age of time-displaced superheroes, either coming forward or coming from the past to that current era. Now that I think about it, yeah, that does happen quite a bit more than... But interrupting, much as I am interrupting my thoughts, an earthquake, although there's not an earthquake here, an earthquake interrupts Star Spangled Kid's thoughts, and he soon jumps out to try to do what he can, which is some. He can cure the symptoms, the different things happening. He can save people from, in this instance, crumbling buildings, save a mother and her child. But he soon realizes that he can't treat the cause. The power rod probably has the ability to help the cause, to fix the cause, change the cause, what have you. But Star Spangled Kid elucidates he doesn't know where the cause is to really be able to do anything substantial other than run around and do, as we in modern vernacular, doing particular things to put out fires. And I'm sure all of you adults out there know exactly what I'm referring to. That's all he feels that he can do. And that's not, you know, that's not overly substantial. That's not helping the overall problem. Camera backs up a little bit and we see that Star Spangled Kid is being observed by Hawkman and Dr. Midnight, whose mission was Seattle. So they have arrived just a little late. Not that they necessarily could have prevented an earthquake either, but they see the results. They see Star Spangled Kid. Hawkman is about to zip down there and help, but Dr. Midnight holds him off because it seems that he and Star Spangled Kid have talked. Dr. Midnight in his guise as a doctor, so it's a doctor-patient thing. Star Spangled Kid, because he is time-displaced and feeling, you know, feeling that. Ran into that a lot over at, well, on and off, over at Marvel from, of course, Captain America. He has experienced the same thing on and off over the years. Dr. Midnight has encouraged Star Spangled Kid to go out there and do your thing. It doesn't matter when you are. Your thing is still available to do. You can still be a hero here and now, even though this may not be the time that you're from. You can still have a point. You can still be pertinent. So Midnight pulls back on Hawkman really doing, the two of them doing anything, which I think in a way is just a horrible idea, because they could still be going around helping civilians, helping get aid to people that need it or places where it's needed, you know, what have you. But we're all focused on poor Star Spangled Kid's psyche right now. And yeah, so kind of weird. We'll momentarily take our leave of the JSA and the Star Spangled Friend and shift our story to a spot some 50,000 miles above the Earth, where a peculiar space station silently swings in an orbit around the equator. And we have a really cool spaceship going beep, beep in space, providing a perfect headquarters for the man known as Brainwave. And we have an image here of Brainwave, and he looks kind of weird. He was last seen in an issue of All-Star Comics in the high 30s. Let me flip several pages here. 37, which unfortunately, well, in a way, I guess, because I don't know. I didn't go back and read the story, but unfortunate that we don't know. We were reading All-Star Comics, of course, to pick up the adventures of Dr. Fate. But at about 19 or 20 of that book, issue number, Dr. Fate left and was not part of the Justice Society or was not in with their adventures. So this occurring in issue 39 was well past anything that we had seen. But that was the last time we saw Brainwave. That was only, what, another 2 years on top of the 25? So it's been close to 30 years since Brainwave has been seen in the pages of a comic book. But he looks a little different from any pictures I've ever seen. He's got this, the outfit, actually, I think I recognize the outfit from, what would it be, Infinity Inc., I think. But he's got this head thing on. He's got a headband, and it's really hard to describe. You would just look up an image on Google of Brainwave from All-Star Comics 58, excuse me. And, well, actually, he'll be in 59 also. And see, it's really weird looking. He looks almost like a Kirby demon creation or something like that in the face, I think. But this former Loki villain has had time to sit and stew, and now he has much greater plans to destroy everything, not just the Justice Society. And so he is the one that beamed the message to the JSA's computer to get them to divide up, to get them to these different places and seemingly not be able to do anything, not be able to help those that needed help because they don't know what to do or how to stop it. Returning down to Earth, we zip down to Cape Town, South Africa. We see a couple gentlemen speaking at, looks like, some sort of business dinner. Nice rooftop lounge eating area overlooking the city. One of the two gentlemen is referred to as Mr. Grayson. So those of you of any reading recognize that last name. We know that that must be the Robin that we have seen referenced in the book and referenced on the cover. He's talking to a Mr. Katobi about a study on the UN attitude toward policies of apartheid. A little heady for me. A little heady for a comic book, too, I think. But there we go. I'm not going to get into the discussion about politics and comic books. People have different views of what has been and what hasn't been and what have you. They've been there. They've been there certain times and certain ways. And there are other times and ways that it doesn't feel the same. It feels a bit more pointed than at other times. So, what have you. There's an explosion. Thraboom Almost immediately, a wave of noxious gas spreads over the city, billowing from the central core of the explosion like oil spreading on water. Mr. Grayson thinks people are fainting. There's something wrong here, and if anyone can get to the bottom of this, it's Robin, the ex-boy wonder. Interesting dichotomy of these two panels. The first, he is standing here on the rooftop, slinking towards maybe a door as he's thinking the people are fainting section that I spoke. Then the next panel, he is jumping through the window of his room in his Robin garb, his dress suit and everything on the bed in the room. Now, to continue that thought, I don't know how long it would have taken him to get from this rooftop down to his room, change his clothes, and jump out the window. But as far as his thinking, it was instantaneous because the two occurred next to each other, one right after the other, which I thought was kind of funny. At about this time, Green Lantern and Dr. Fate arrive, as Cape Town was their mission. They too arrive after the fact. This explosion has already occurred, and there's a plume of this gas you can see in the panel rising, and then there's tendrils all over the place. Green Lantern does a quick spectroanalysis of it and finds out that the gas is fluorocarbons, the outlawed inert gas which destroys the Earth's ozone layer. Manufacturers once used it in aerosol cans before the government learned about its deadly effect and stopped its production. Then this is an artificial disaster. So there you go. There's another little interesting bit of, dare I say, politicking there in discussing of fluorocarbons and being outlawed by the government. And then we just saw a thing in the same area, Cape Town here, Robin discussing apartheid. Mr. Conway seems quite intent on interjecting as much real world as he can in our escape, get away from the real world comic book. So not sure I necessarily appreciate that, but I will just say that, Mr. Conway, I see what you're doing, and I'll just leave it at that. The disaster is man-made. It's not naturally occurring. And then Green Lantern succumbs. Now, this is interesting. Green Lantern succumbs and starts to fall, okay, because I guess he is being rendered semi or unconscious, whichever the case may be, and he starts to fall. Dr. Fate decides that he is going to cause it to rain between my power ring beam, this is Green Lantern speaking, and your magic, Dr. Fate, we seem to be disposing of this death gas in no time flat. Appearances are often deceiving, Green Lantern. We mustn't allow ourselves to forget the danger is anything but past. He made it rain, and the rain, Dr. Fate did, and the rain neutralized the gas. Now, they've noticed that all the gas is being emitted is pluming from a central source. Dr. Fate says that his magic, he doesn't necessarily know what to do to stop it coming from the source. And Green Lantern says, well, I know what to do. And he summons up out of his will energy a giant cork, and he shoves the cork into the hole in the ground that the gas is coming from. Okay. A rather golden agey, I think, fix for what is a more modern agey kind of problem. They see nearby, laying on the ground, is one Mr. Grayson attired as Robin. I'm sorry. I guess in this guise, it would be more appropriate to call him Robin, because that's who he is. He had almost made the source of the gas, but had succumbed and had passed out. Fate and Green Lantern are helping him, and as they are, the forces propelling the gas rise to such a degree that it pops the cork out of the ground, the resulting release of everything, quote-unquote explosion, knock Fate and Green Lantern out, as they were standing closest to the source than Robin. So they get knocked out. The force is dissipated by impacting on their bodies, and Robin remains conscious while they are, in fact, knocked out. Not knowing what to do now, you know, Robin is faced with this dilemma that whatever is going on has just knocked out a couple really powerful superheroes, and he is the only one left that he knows of there to do something with it. We then cut to Peking in China, where in the middle of Peking, essentially, a volcano has grown and is now erupting. as Flash and Wildcat get there, all of the residents of the city are seen just rushing out in waves of humanity away from the city. Curious thing, too, it looks like Wildcat is just being pulled along behind the Flash. He's like, what's the term? Drafting? He's drafting behind the Flash, just being carried along. Have we seen that? I don't think I've ever seen that. But Wildcat does say something because the Flash stops. And of course, when he stops, what's going to happen is Wildcat is just going to bang right into the back of him. And he says, hey, watch the sudden stops, Flash. If I weren't so good on my feet, there'd be splattered cat all over the countryside. Kind of funny. They see the volcano. Now Wildcat commandeers a motorcycle to drive around and do something. I'm not sure what Wildcat is going to do against a volcano. I'm not sure what Flash is going to do against a volcano, but being superheroes, we'll have to see something. So maybe Wildcat starts trying to help the people themselves. Flash go takes on the volcano because what he does is he starts running back and forth in the same path, cutting a trench. Hopefully a trench big enough to hold the lava, the trench being between, I would assume, the city, we don't really see that, and the volcano. So the volcano is erupting, lava flowing. The Flash has cut a trench hoping to hold the lava from proceeding on into the city, which is a pretty good idea, just dependent on how long the eruption lasts, you know, how much lava comes streaming up. Not a bad idea. Wildcat catches up with him. And as the two are kind of exchanging notes for what they've been able to do, this red, white, and blue figure flies over the top of them. Superman is not available, so it's not Supes. And she starts doing this weird thing with, I guess it's the lava flow. She forms the lava flow into a semi-rigid tongue, I guess, like of rock, and then takes that and bends it back and shoves it down into the volcano, plugging the mouth of the volcano, which is an interesting thing to do because we saw perhaps how that could turn out with Green Lantern plugging a big cork in the hole in the ground, emitting the noxious fumes. I would have to think a volcano is going to react in large measure the same way, just perhaps a tad more violently for something like that. We will see, perhaps. Let's see, a couple page turns here, and we are introduced to Power Girl, Superman's cousin, which he has been a little bit more secretive about the existence of his cousin here on Earth 2. I believe Superman on Earth 1 didn't seem to keep his cousin quiet quite as long as this. I believe that would be Supergirl. So Supergirl's been known for quite a bit longer than Power Girl on Earth 1. But nonetheless, here she is, just in time to help Flash and Wildcat subdue the large majority of the Communist China's army. They, I don't know, I guess have decided that they don't need help from the Amerikanskis. Or, no, I'm sorry. That's, I put that. Conway didn't put that. He's more involved in apartheid and fluorocarbons than, yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of all of Conway's work. So they defeat the army. Power Girl, we find out, knows, she is the smartest person in the room. So she knows a lot more about what's going on than anyone else. She is our, I guess, essentially our point of view character. We're empowering our first appearance of Power Girl by she being the one with all of the pertinent information. She knows Brainwave. She knows he's doing it. She knows what he's doing it. She knows the other messages that got sent out. She knows the areas the messages cover. She knows everything that we know, essentially. And she is one character from one location. So why she knows anything like that at all, I guess maybe we'll find out next issue. We'll just have to wait and find out. And that's pretty much where we end. She gives Flash and Wildcat that information. Like I say, basically everything we have seen and read in this issue, she tells Flash and Wildcat. How she knows and why she knows, hopefully we'll find out next issue. which we will be talking about next episode. All-Star Comics Presents Super Squad, issue number 59, is what I will be looking at for next episode. So if you want to hear me continue to smush on Jerry Conway, no guarantees that I will. I'm sure there will be things about his writing that I like, but overall, I've never been the biggest fan of him and his real world that he wants to pull in and speak of in comic books. Comics are an escape for me. Superheroes are majorly an escape. Why are you going to saddle superheroes down with real world things? I'm not a fan of that. I know a lot of other people want the intersection of their real and fictional worlds, which, again, I don't understand, because I fiction in order to escape the real world. You know, not that I live a bad life and need to escape, as I'm throwing up the quotes, but just to get away from all of the thoughts and worries and what have you of real life, I read comic books, and that's a way to get away for a little while. I don't want the two to mix. I don't like the two to mix, but over the years, they have mixed quite a bit. Mr. Conway seems to do that pretty much all the time in his writing. So next time we'll see, as I step off my bully pulpit here. Contact information I gave at the top, guys. I will talk to you again next time. Ciao.